Hi there, Craig Wilkinson. Welcome to another episode of Dangerous But Good. Today I've got a wonderful guest, someone I've worked with quite extensively. And we're going to have a very sobering but very important conversation. Martin Pelders is a man who started an organization called Matrix Men. And he focuses very much on helping men who've been through abuse. It's not something that's widely talked about, but something that really needs to be talked about. So, Martin, welcome, man. Really good to have you on the show. And you've got a phenomenal story.
Thanks. Yeah, it's kind of not my story anymore. You know? It's become the nation's story rather than mine. Right?
But hats off to you, man. Thanks. I mean, there's no better way of getting people to open up than opening up yourself.
Well, that's how it started, Craig. You know, I mean, I heard other men speaking about what they'd been through. Right. And that essentially gave me permission to start telling my story. And it's in, you know, I'm a big believer of narrative therapy. Mm-hmm. So it's when you tell your story that you externalize it and it doesn't become that thing in your head that plagues you all the time. And then going through the process of telling that story and then rewriting the narrative and becoming a better person, you know.
Well, that's powerful because it heals you yourself. And it helps heal other men.
Absolutely.
This show is really all about being dangerous to the danger. And I think you really have been a danger to the danger of sexual abuse of boys. You know? You know, hats off.
It's a lonely journey.
It is a lonely journey. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I've got something to read here, which is quite phenomenal. And I'm sure you've got a lot to say about it. Mm. But it says here, sexual abuse of boys is common, underreported, under-recognized and under-treated.
Yes.
How profound is that?
Yep.
Sexual abuse of girls has been widely studied. I mean, let's be honest. Sexual abuse in any form of any human being is absolutely disgusting, intolerable.
Yeah.
Sexual abuse of girls has been widely studied, leading to awareness of the risk factors and prevalence. Unfortunately, there have been relatively fewer studies done on sexual abuse of boys, leading to inadequate knowledge about the facts related to this topic. Some of the studies that are available have a high degree of subjectivity, poor sampling techniques, and poor designs with few control elements. Underreporting is a result of many issues. Boys are less likely than girls to report sexual abuse because of fear, because of the social stigma against homosexual behavior, the desire to appear self-reliant. Boys often grow up believing they should not allow themselves to be harmed or talk about painful experiences, and also the concern for loss of independence. Evidence suggests that one in every three incidents of child sexual abuse are not remembered by the adults who experience them. And that the younger the child was at the time of the abuse and the closer the relationship to the abuser, the more likely one is that the child will not be able to recall the event. How tragic is that? Though rates are likely to underestimate the actual number of sexual abuse cases in boys, approximately one in six boys is sexually abused before age 16. There's a lot of stuff in there, underreporting, stigmas attached to it, not much, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I mean, the issue is, let me just go through, there's two major studies that I quote, right? Yeah. So the one is it's a long name, it's called the 13,915 Reasons for Equity in Health. Right. So originally this was done by, done by two professors from Canada or the US, and they were researching the spread of HIV/AIDS mm-hmm. back in the 2000s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So we had the whole Mbeki AIDS denialism mm-hmm. thing going on and whatever, and they're looking for reasons for the rapid spread of HIV/AIDS right. in South Africa, right? So one of them, Dr. Anderson, came up with this idea. Neil Anderson, that's right. Sorry. He said, let's have a look at the role of sexual abuse mm-hmm. in the spread of HIV/AIDS. So he went out to 1,192 schools around the country.
In South Africa.
In South Africa, right? So it's a very specific to South Africa study. And he interviewed, I think, 127,000 girls, 126,000, just short of 126,000 boys. And then all hell broke loose because he came back with these numbers. 44% of all boys had suffered sexual abuse by the age of 18, right? But the numbers were interesting. The perpetrator was very interesting. So it broke down to 32% of the boys had been abused by men, 27% of the boys had been abused by both male and female, 41% of them had been abused by women.
Just women,
right? Just women, right? 20% of them had suffered abuse by teachers. Mm-hmm. Right. So again, we get
in. Was this sexual abuse or sexual abuse of any kind?
No, sexual abuse. Yeah, this was focused on sexual abuse because of the spread of HIV/AIDS, right? So now we start getting into an area where, boy, we're touching on things, two things that we just, you know what, doesn't fit the narrative that we've been spewing for the last 60 years, right? Boys sadly suffer the same sort of pain in terms of, you know, psychological pain when they are, do have suffered sexual abuse.
Boys and girls equally human, same heart, same...
Exactly, exactly, you know.
So the bottom line there is a lot more boys being abused than is widely known.
Yes.
And the perpetrators are a lot more skewed towards both men and women than we previously, as you say, like the narrative to indicate.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I mean, so going to your story, as I mentioned as we started, your story is powerful because you've been there. You have been a victim. And it affected your life in very, very dark ways, which it inevitably would. And you worked through that, and you've come out now at the other end, having dealt with it, and are now helping other boys to deal with it. And really, I think, Martin, there are two major issues here. One is getting boys to actually share that they have been abused. I mean, like the research says, a lot of boys grow up to men and they don't even remember what they've been through. So it's creating a safe space for boys to actually admit, or men to actually say, because there is a shame attached to that, isn't there? Even though it was absolutely not their fault whatsoever. It's the whole victim blaming thing. And then the second thing, you know, once they've come out with it, is the healing process, which is profoundly difficult because the wounds are deep, aren't they?
Very deep.
I mean, if you wouldn't mind just sharing your story.
Sure.
Because I think your story is healing balm to many and permission to many to let's deal with this.
So, and essentially it started for me at about age five, from what I can remember, right?
Yeah.
So it was also, pretty – it's always best to start at the end, right, and work back to the beginning and this sort of thing. Otherwise it gives away too much, right? So, I mean, I was a young adult going through life trying to – do everything that society prescribes that I should do in order to be happy. This ultimate goal in the sky somewhere, be happy, you know, be happy. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was suffering from what today would be termed clinical depression, right? So I woke up in the morning going like, oh, man, I'm still alive. Why? You know, I'd rather be dead. You know, why didn't I just pass away in my sleep? And one of the cries.
Is this in your early 20s?
Yeah, from 13, 14, 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
Teens.
Yes. Yeah. My first suicide attempt was at 16, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, and you wake up in the morning and you go like, God, why don't you just let me die? You know, is this all there is to life? No. When you come to puberty, there's a lot of confusion.
Sure.
Massive. For everybody. It's a standard, right? Sexual identity crisis. What am I? Who am I? Mm-hmm. You're trying to find who you're supposed to be as a young man, especially. And you go through that, but mine was just worse. It was just totally worse. And my poor father didn't know what to do with me. Mm-hmm. He was just like, shame, man. What? I don't know how to help you. I really don't. Mm-hmm. And I grew up, and then eventually you find the girlfriend, and you get married, and you get the house, and you get the cars and the TVs, and then you try and have the children, and nothing worked. You know, until sort of age 42, 43, by this time I was a full-blown alcoholic. I had massive rage, massive anger issues.
Right.
I was fortunately, I was the type of guy who'd rather break my hands on the wall and punch holes in doors and that sort of thing, and then punch people. So you're dealing with it, and you don't even know where this comes from. You really don't.
Just burning in a rage.
Oh, man, you're so angry all the time. It's just crazy, you know.
Right.
And then one day I came home early from work, and I sat down, and the Oprah Winfrey Show was on. And there was this chap by the name of Tyler Perry, and it was called The 200 Men. And my ex at the time, she said, I think you should watch this. And she just got up, took my daughter, and walked out the lounge and left me there. And I sat there listening to 200 men talking about me. It was insane. Never experienced anything like that in my life.
Sharing their stories,
telling me how I felt, but saying that that's how they felt, you know. And I was like, what's going on here? This is insane. You know? I couldn't understand it. And throughout this whole story, they would say, when he sexually abused me, and I go, oh, that didn't happen to me. So I'd kind of write it off almost, you know.
Right.
And then one guy would say, oh, I was raped as a child. And I go like, wow, that didn't happen to me. And mm-hmm. I write it off again, you know. And right at the end, this guy stood up and he says, I just want to say something. If you have children, you will never hurt them because you love them too much. And that was, for me, the punch in the solar plexus. Mm-hmm. It was just like a massive, because at one stage I was changing my daughter's nappy. And I looked at her and this little devil popped up on my shoulder and he said, oh, you're going to hurt her, you know. And he says, like, you're going to stick your finger in there. It's very graphic, but that's what was going through my mind. Then this angel popped up the other side and he said, no, you'll never hurt her because you love her too much. Mm-hmm. And the devil was like, ah, you're going to hurt her, you're going to hurt her. And it was like I started feeling like I was schizophrenic because mm-hmm. these voices were that real. And that's when I got to a point where the drinking escalated because I realized that I would come home in the afternoon, have two tots of gin mm-hmm. just to take the edge off, as so many people say they do, you know. But it became a case of I would walk into the house, pour a glass of gin and just down it because I knew if I could get drunk enough fast enough, my wife would not let me touch my daughter. And that's what it became. I just started drinking a glass of gin and then it was a case of every night I would mm-hmm. just drink. But in this show, when that guy stood up and said that, it meant something to me. And in that instant, it felt like somebody had lifted a one-ton concrete mm-hmm. block off my shoulders. Mm-hmm. That is the only way I can describe that feeling. For the first time in my 43 years of life, I could actually take a full, unhindered breath. Mm. I could fill my lungs for the first time. And that weight had just been removed off my shoulders. It was crazy. I started crying then. I never cried, right? Never. And I started crying. I don't think I stopped crying for like 3 months. It was insane. It's just like somebody would say hi to me and I'd just burst into tears. It was ridiculous. And then I started regaining memories. And I started remembering. So from the age of 13 to the age of 19, I had a guy by the name of Gary who would molest me and, mm-hmm. and play with me and, you know. Mm-hmm. And these memories started coming back. And then one night I was busy reading something and all of a sudden these memories started popping into my head of my mother molesting me in the bath, playing with me and mm-hmm. all sorts of things, you know, unnecessary stuff. You know, it's one mm-hmm. thing if somebody washes you, you know,
sure.
but when you're 10 years old and they start playing with your penis until you're erect, that's not what mummies do,
you know.
And then I started going through this huge issue and then I started remembering at 12 I was raped by another woman and molestations by other men and it just became, I was like, you know, wow. And I still remember looking up one night when I remembered that, all of that. I looked up to the ceiling and I said, God, why did you let this happen to me? I was just a child, mm-hmm. you know. We all like to blame God for everything, right?
Right.
And this sentence popped into my head and it said, if it hadn't happened to you, who would go on to help others?
Mm.
And that one sentence kind of wiped away my past, gave me hope and gave me a future and a purpose. Right. And that's, essentially my life story in a nutshell.
It's a phenomenal journey. Thanks for sharing that, man. Powerful,
pleasure.
Powerful. I'm sure there are very many men listening to this that have experienced similar things. The healing process, Martin, it obviously wasn't tell us about that. Because you got to a point of extreme rage, which you didn't understand. Crazy thoughts going through your head, which terrified you. Drinking a hell of a lot to anesthetize the pain.
Yeah.
Having challenges, I'm sure, in relationships and all kinds of things. And then you realize what had happened and then the healing process started. Can you talk us through the healing process? Because that, you know, one thing knowing what happened, because, I mean, that might even produce more rage and more anger at God and whoever. And there's a process of letting that go. I mean, talk us through that.
So we always have, you know, what they call the stages of grief.
Yeah.
Right? And no matter how much you deny that it's that's what happens.
The facts are the facts,
and you have to go through the stages of grief. And if you're not going through the stages of grief, you're not dealing with it, right? So in this activism space, I know there are so many people that are out there gallantly trying to do good, but they've not been through the healing process, and they bring to that space a lot of anger and hatred.
Right. Bitterness, which is anger.
Bitterness,
resentment,
anger,
desire for revenge.
And this is where we start getting into the space of all men are trash and all men are rapists and, you know, all that sort of nonsense, which is utter rubbish, right? I mean, when we start looking at the science behind all of this, in fact, the equal amounts of male rapists, there are female rapists. So let's be honest about it.
Different
this.
Manifestations, I guess, but
yes,
same principle.
That's it, you know. And when I look at being 12 and being raped by a much older woman, right, I didn't give consent. I didn't say yes, you know, I want this, you know. All my life I've wanted to sleep with this lady I wasn't even attracted to, right? And you don't want that. And when your first, I want to call it experience, you know, but it wasn't. It wasn't an experience because, I mean, I'd suffered abuse and sexual abuse before that, right? But there was kind of this thing that I was treasuring and I was holding on to that would be my first intimate experience with a woman of my choosing.
Yeah. With mutual consent.
Mutual consent, you know, intimate and loving and caring. And that was taken away from me by this by this lady, you know. So now get to the healing process, right? So you're filled with anger and rage. Go through it, experience it, understand it, embrace it. You're allowed to. My goodness, you've been through a lot.
It's justified.
It's justified anger, right? And I always say anger is an emotion until you put an action to it, right? So don't action emotion, right? Then there's this process where you have to go sadness. So I wept about the loss of my childhood, right? So I didn't have a mommy.
What was stolen from you?
Yes, I didn't have a mommy that nurtured me and hugged me and loved me and encouraged me and all that sort of stuff. I had a dad who was also not present in the house because he was trying to avoid mommy because she was a total narcissist, right? And yeah, full blown. I mean, everybody says everybody's a narcissist. You don't agree with me, but no, she was. It was all about her. You know, you would get a hug on the kind of a sideward hug if you made her look good. It was fine, you know. But other than that, stay in your lane and talk about how wonderful mommy is, you know. So you have to go through the grief, the sadness, the anger, and I can't remember all the stages off by heart, right? And you cannot deny any one of those processes.
Right.
And it's hard.
There's no shortcut.
There's no shortcut. Yeah. You know, it's a forest you have to go through, and there's brambles and there's thorns and there's everything. And the only way through to the other side is through. Not around, not over, not under. You have to go through it. You have to experience all of those emotions. And then you start going, and then eventually you get to a point where you go, forgiveness, right? So along the journey that I went through, which was probably about a year, right, of intense work, right? And at this point, I was doing research online. I was buying any book I could find on the topic. I was studying. I was buying psychology books. I mean, understand something. I'm a Dorf Oak. I've got the matric. That's it. You know what I mean? I never did any advanced, any studying, anything like that, right? So wading through books on psychiatry and psychology was not easy for me, you know, believe you me. But like you get into the language eventually. And I would study as much as it because knowledge is power.
Did you have anyone helping you through this process?
Not at all.
It was solely driven by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. In fact, what ended up happening is I ended up going to a psychologist for help. I got to a point where I was like, man, this is too painful. I can't do this alone. So I went to a psychologist. And of course, it's that thing where you like try and build rapport and you chat in and everything. And eventually, like the third or the fourth or the fifth session, you go, okay, I think I trust them enough to give them this information, right? And then I would say, you know, I got to tell you something that, like, you know, I was sexually abused as a child. And in that instant, if the psychologist or the therapist or the whoever just blinks wrong or moves uncomfortably in their chair, you just shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
And that happened to me five times.
With five different psychologists?
Five different psychologists, right? And I'm still, again, my ex-wife, as much as I hated her at some point in my life, she came through for me and she said, yeah, there's this thing called, I think it was the Sophia Town Counseling Services or something at the time. And she said, why don't you phone these? And I phoned them and I ended up going to a Catholic church in the north of Joburg somewhere. And I met this old guy, very short, stout, with sweet face, gray hair, called Ken. And I went through, built that rapport. And eventually I said to him, you know, Ken, I got to tell you, but I was raped as a child. And he sat there, stoic face. And he just like, in fact, he looked a little almost sad for me, you know, and he just looked at me and smiled and he says, I'm sorry that happened to you. Would you like to tell me more? And boy, that was it.
Floodgates opened.
Floodgates opened. Finally, I found somebody who'd given me permission to talk about it. And it was a difficult process and it took a year to get over the worst of it. Yeah, I would say 7-8 months was intense. This is when you got all these memories flooding back, and you know, and you're just remembering things you don't want to remember.
Which you had blocked out and suppressed.
Completely suppressed. Yeah, I mean, like that night, I started remembering the things my mom did to me. It was freakish. Mm-hmm. In that, I was reading a story on a website, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like the story was talking about a bathroom and everything, and I remember going back and trying to find the story, and I couldn't find it anywhere. Mm-hmm. It was gone, right? But it detailed exactly what happened to me as a child, and it was crazy, you know. Like, I would actually go to bath early and lock the bathroom door so I could avoid my mom coming in, and you know. But she somehow, I don't know how she knew these things, she would just arrive home early from work one day and then come and unlock the door from outside. It was like one of those old fashioned, disabled bathroom locks, you know. Mm-hmm. And she would unlock and she would come in, and she would always take her shirt off and put it on the toilet seat. I could never understand why. She would say to me, "Oh, but I don't want to get my shirt dirty." I'm going, like, it's the end of the day, you know. Mm-hmm. Even it's over, you can change, you know. And take her shirt off and then start. And she would scrub my back until it was raw, almost bleeding, you know. And then start fondling me and all that sort of thing. And I started regaining all these memories. That was the last time I really wanted to kill myself again. And that was difficult. Sure. That was very hard, you know, to remember all of that. But you wade through and you push through, and you have to keep going. And it's nice to have somebody who can hold your hand and take you through this process, you know, and guide you through it. I can't make you heal, but I can guide you through the process. I can be there to support you when you fall down. You know, I can be there to help you through and say, well, this is what I experienced. You know? Maybe it's different for you. You know, that sort of stuff. Yeah. And that's what we do. And it's
fantastic. Yeah. And you've seen some great results.
Huge, man. Huge. Yeah. You know, it's spectacular, because the process we go through is about a 10-month process, right? So we meet every second week, and we'll go through a program that we have, and it's 20 steps. So the last one is like a graduation, so 21-step program. But don't be put off by the steps. It's not that. It's just guiding you through three stages of recovery. And there comes a point in the second stage of recovery, it's like 3 months in, where guys will walk in and they, Craig, I can't even explain it. They literally, they physically look different.
Lighter, more lighter. Alive.
Their skin's bright. Their eyes are shining. You know what I mean? They're walking more upright.
Fantastic.
And then you just have to look at them and you go, okay, I see you got it this week, right? Yeah. And they go, yeah, I did. You know,
so a lot of that's got to do with shame departing, isn't it?
Massive.
Shame.
Yeah. And it's sudden realizations where you start putting things in. You know, I'll give you two quick stories, right?
Right.
So one guy's, him and his family would go fishing often, you know. So two sons, daughter, wife, off they go to the dam. And he says he went, and this is one of the guys, you know, he walked in the next week. I went, oh, yeah, you got it this week, right? He went, yes. And it's kind of a weird side effect to that, but I'll get to that. And I said, oh, you got it this week? He said, yeah. And I said, you want to tell me? And he said, yeah, we went fishing this last week. And I said, yes. And he said, I got a fish. And we were talking and we were all drinking and we were having fun and just being a family. It was nice. It was really nice. He said, I got this fish and I was reeling it in. And the next thing, it got off. And I went, man, and I put the rod down. He says, but I looked around like this. Isn't my entire family was just backing away from me. They were like, and their eyes were big and their mouths were open and they were like, and just backing away. He says, and I realized that something had changed. So I don't know what it was. He says, but like then I started remembering that in prior times, if a fish got off the line, I would just like, I would flip. I would start throwing and kicking and breaking my rod and all that sort of stuff. And he says, I didn't do that. And they were shocked. He says, and in that moment, I realized how I'd impacted on their lives. Now, you'd think that's a bad thing, but it's not. It's a good thing, because he can start fixing those relationships now, you know? And that is something that I kept saying to the guys. I said, you know what? When you get to that point, don't ever term any relationship as dead. You know, I will never get things fixed with my son or my daughter or whatever. I've hurt them too much. It's never too late.
You can turn it around.
You can, always, you know. So that's the one story. The other one is a guy who's like, he's driving, you know, and this guy suffered road rage. I mean, like ridiculous road rage, right? He would actually, if you offended him on the road, he would follow you 10 kilometers out of his way to get out of the car and not fight with you, just shout in your face, you're an idiot, and then get back in his car and carry on his journey to home, you know. And he says he was driving along one day and he's got this little girl, daughter was about 5 or 6 in the back of the car, and somebody did something funny. And he says, I went, ah, man, you idiot, and I tapped my hooter. I went, dub, dub. He says, the next thing, I just hear these swear words coming from the back seat. And I look around, it's my little 5-year-old daughter going like, ah, you this, you that, and expletives and whatever. And he says, and then I realized.
She was modeling his previous behavior.
His behavior. Yeah. He says, and then I realized how much I'd impacted. Right. But this guy went from meeting me in tears at a coffee shop, right, about to lose his job, about to lose his marriage, about to lose everything that he'd worked for in his life, to he's now he works for a big bank. He's African manager for his division, right? His house is all so his sound. His life
is totally turned around.
Totally turned around.
By dealing with this.
Yeah.
Martin, what are some of the symptoms? You mentioned rage, obviously escaping into alcohol. You know, what are some of the symptoms for an adult man who've been through abuse as a youngster?
Yeah, I like to term it my big five, right?
Right.
So men have been given 5 coping mechanisms, right? So the one is addiction, anger, all right? And then it's sex, silence, and sport, right? So if you go through...
Say that again, yep.
So anger, addiction, sex, silence, sport.
Right.
Right. So sport and silence kind of tie up together.
Because withdrawing emotionally.
You're withdrawing emotionally, absolutely. So when you're in a relationship and you get these five, the big five that men have given, then something or a combination of them. It's never just one in isolation.
Right.
It will be more. So men, let's start addiction, right? Drink too much. Yeah. So every weekend have to get drunk, right? So when you start drawing the parallels, every weekend he has to spend with his family.
Yeah.
So it's easier to do that drunk because again, emotionally not available. That's what it draws down to, right? Addiction, anger.
And addiction can be to pornography, work food. Well, any of those things.
Anything like that. Everybody goes, addiction is always alcohol or street drugs.
Yes.
People are addicted to cough syrup.
Right.
People are addicted to medications.
You can get addicted to YouTube clips, huh?
Addicted, and that big one, social media. Yep, you sit all day flicking through social media.
You're stuck in that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm, you know, I have that addictive personality. Mm-hmm. I was like praying that this would just leave me, but it doesn't. You have to physically work at it.
Become aware of it.
Yeah. Yes.
So addiction is a big one.
It's a massive one. Yeah.
So that's the first one. Second one?
Second one, anger.
Anger.
Right? So anger becomes a defense mechanism for a lot of men. So when you start touching nerves with them, they get angry, but excessively so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something, it's like you get upset with somebody who's done something wrong and you're like, and you walk away.
Yeah, you get on with it.
Right, you get on with it. And then eventually you get, I'm sorry, I got angry, you know, that sort of stuff. But the anger becomes so where it's literally like shouting in each other's faces, walking around, kicking things, punching things, breaking things, even down to violence, right? Physically assaulting your wife or your loved ones, right? And I always say, in terms of that, I've never met an abusive man who wants to be an abusive man.
Right. There's a sense of guilt and this is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out of control.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And whenever I meet them, they go like, I don't know what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I get so angry and I don't know what happens. I black out and then I just go into this blind rage and I don't want to be this person. They hate themselves. They literally. And when people come, everybody's always sorry after they've beaten their wives. Yes, they are genuinely sorry. But the trick is to show them why they get angry.
Deal with the root cause of it.
Deal with the root cause. How do you manage that, you know? Recognize your anger. Where does it start? Every person who gets angry, it starts somewhere in their body. It's a feeling. Right. It's an emotion. It's something, you know? And the youngest kid I've treated for anger management's 9. Hey? And it's that sad. Yeah. 9, right? Eventually, we got into the whole thing. His mom came from an abusive childhood and background, and she deals with everything through violence, right? So child misbehaves, anger, bam, 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 bam. And this kid picks that up, and then he says, I get to a point where they hurt my heart and I feel ashamed, and then he blacks out and he starts kicking TVs and throwing phones through windows and things like that. And mommy's like, oh, how do I deal with this? And I gave him tools. At 9, I gave him tools to manage his anger. And he's doing fine. He's doing really well, you know.
So anger is a clear sign something's wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Repressed. You think about it. You've kept the secret
right.
for 30, 40 years, right? It's got to come out somewhere.
Right.
And it comes out in little bits.
And you're angry because you've been hurt.
Yes.
Abused, violated. Something's been stolen from you. You know, the anger's justified.
Yes, yes.
But it needs to be dealt with.
And this is why I hate these terms like all men are trash and everything, because that just reinforces that you're worth nothing. Your abuse means nothing. We're not interested in your story. Yeah. We don't care about you.
Right.
And we got to change that narrative. Absolutely. We have to.
We've got to heal.
Yeah.
And the third one?
Silence.
Silence.
Yes. So in any order. Silence. Guy comes home from work. Well, he spends excessive time at work, so he avoids the family. Comes home from work. I've got to work. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. Right? That boils over to the weekend. Starts on Saturday morning. I want to watch the cricket. Leave me alone. Don't make a noise. Leave me alone. I'm watching the pre-practice for Formula One. I'm watching the rugby this. I'm watching the soccer that, you know? So it becomes that. So you can see where the sports angle comes into. But the sports, again, becomes a thing where I play for a club and every Saturday. I use sports. I cycled. Mm-hmm. And I would go out on Saturday morning at 5:30, 6:00. And I would cycle to 1:00 in the afternoon.
Right.
You're right. Come home and then leave me alone.
Yes.
Leave me alone. I'm tired.
Inability and unwillingness to actually go anywhere emotionally.
Yes.
Because emotions are a cesspool of hurt and pain.
And we aren't given the tools to manage those emotions, right? So it's a big thing, again, through recovery.
Right.
We teach you about emotions.
Yes.
You know?
How to identify them, articulate them, deal with them.
Exactly. Right, right. And realize that they are just that. Yeah. And you're allowed to feel them.
They're valid.
Yes, yeah. You know, again, I get back to the thing, anger is an emotion as long as you don't put an action to it. So you're allowed to get angry. Just don't start breaking stuff, right? That's manage it.
Yeah.
So I turn around, a lot of guys, I'll say to them, find where your anger starts, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, it starts in my belly, okay. Then it moves to where? Mm-hmm. It moves up, and eventually when it gets to my head, bam, things go mad. And then I say, well, choose where you want to stop it, mm-hmm. right? I want to stop it when it gets to my throat. Okay, cool. What are you going to do, right? Oh, I'll put my hands up or whatever the case may be, right? And just turn around and say, hey, leave me. I just want to unpack and off you go. And that's how you manage your anger. Then the fifth one is sex.
Right.
So sex takes the shape of pornography. So I have a beautiful wife, but I'd rather sit and watch porn and masturbate by myself because I don't know how to be intimate with somebody, right? It could be people who have multiple relationships and they don't know. It's like, I don't know why. I'm just drawn. I have to. It's this thing, you know, it's a drug almost.
It's a sex addiction, isn't it?
It is a sex addiction, essentially. So they keep sleeping around and they don't understand why. And you kind of got to get to that thing where you say, well, what is it that you really want? You know, is it the intimacy physically or is it the intimacy emotionally?
Right.
And again, we get to that thing where I'm avoiding emotional connections.
Right.
So sex is just an answer, you know. And without fail, the guys always say to me, when I have a relationship, when I cheat on my wife, like the pain I feel is just exponential. It's just crazy. You know, I feel worse.
So there's a self-hatred as well.
Absolutely.
So none of those five things help in any way.
None of them.
They're symptoms.
No. Yeah.
Well, that's very, very useful, Martin. I mean, a lot of men walk through life unexamined, not examining why am I the way I am. You know, they just sort of say, well, my dad had a bad temper, therefore I have a bad temper. Or, you know, I just can't help myself. And that's absolute nonsense, isn't it?
Absolutely.
There's a reason for it. There's some root cause.
Yes.
And most men, as you said earlier, desire to be good men, but find themselves hamstrung, find themselves, you know, without the tools, without the understanding, without the self-knowledge, without the emotional wholeness to actually be good men.
Absolutely.
And these are phenomenal tools.
Yeah. Well, we try.
it's fantastic. But look, again, hats off to you, man. Men, for a man to say, I was raped is incredibly difficult because of the pride that men have, you know. There's a sense of absolute shame, absolute weakness, you know, a sense of, you know, that doesn't happen to real men, which is such a lie, you know, particularly as a child. It's absolutely not your fault.
Yeah.
It's not something you wanted. It's not something you asked for. It happened to you. You're a victim. And but in spite of the fact of all these facts, there's still a sense of shame.
Yes.
It shouldn't have happened to me. I'm weak. Why did it happen to me? I think a lot of that happens in incarcerated scenarios as well. Huh?
Usually.
With men in jail and also coming out and not able to confess.
Let's not get this wrong. Mm. Believe me, it's happening outside as well.
Right.
It seems to be the new game. Mm-hmm. It seems to be the new fashion, right? So there are, we're having a lot of cases of male rape.
Really?
gang rapes, that sort of stuff. In fact, I spoke to an FCS officer and she said to me, Martin, I'm glad you're talking about this. And I said, why? She says, I investigate on average 5-6 cases a week of men that are gang raped.
Really?
And they never come forward.
It's not publicized. You know,
it's not publicized. It's not spoken about. I'm busy with a case at the moment where young men, mm-hmm. you know, 19 upwards, were raped essentially by a youth pastor at a church in Rosebank, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
So this guy used his authority and his power to get into the minds and the psyches of vulnerable mm-hmm. boys
yeah.
or vulnerable young men and use that against mm-hmm. them, you know. And
shocking.
Yeah, this particular, we got 4 men that have come forward in this particular case, but right. we know of 20 others.
Right.
You know, so this guy's a voracious predator.
Right.
And he still masquerades around like I'm the holy singer and, yeah. you know, I'm this worship yeah. leader and I'm so fantastic.
Yeah.
But he's, again, a broken boy, but that doesn't entitle him to be able to do that.
One has to stop
sort of
the
stuff.
Cycle.
Yeah.
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 Anything you'd like to share we haven't covered?
Well, I think essentially, I mean, it's I know this is a painful topic and I know it's something, but, you know, in listening to this podcast, we've planted a seed in you somehow, right? We've twigged a nerve somewhere and it's just don't stay silent because it just – it is so destructive to your life. Believe you me, you know. I mean, there's this thing where we learn that, you know, I do a lot of research these days. By the way, I've become like an academic almost from being a Dorf matriculant, right. you know. So I work on this thing called adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. And we know from adverse childhood experiences that if you've suffered 3 or more major traumas in childhood, that you stand a higher propensity to diabetes, cancer, ischemic heart disease, depression, anxiety,
suicide.
Right. Yeah. yeah, yeah. I mean, your chances of suicidality go up 1,400%. That's not just a little bit. That's a lot. There's a reason why in South Africa, what's it, 25, 26 men per day kill themselves.
Yeah.
It's not
adverse childhood experiences, trauma.
Yeah. Trauma, absolutely. Yeah. yeah. And it's broken down into 10 categories. So it's poverty is one of them. Fatherlessness is another one of them, right? Or growing up in single-parent homes, in homes where one of the parents is addicted, in homes where a parent was diagnosed with depression, whatever, psychiatric issues, sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal, mental, emotional, and they'll say incarceration of a sibling or a parent. So there are 10 major categories, and it impacts on your life, and the best way to deal with it is to talk about it.
Absolutely. Bring it under the light.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much, man. In closing, this is a profoundly difficult topic, but a profoundly important one. Abuse in any form, perpetrated by anybody, on anybody, is absolutely abominable. You as a human being are incredibly valuable, incredibly precious. It's not your fault. Abuse is never our fault. We tend to victim blame. We've seen today and heard today from Martin that men and boys and girls alike are abused, and they're abused by men and women. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who abuses, it's wrong. It's terrible. It's absolutely destructive, and we need to break free from that. And the way to break free, as Martin said so succinctly right at the end, is to bring it into the light. If you or anyone you know has any of these symptoms, the big 5 of abuse, of trauma, of adverse childhood experiences that you're experiencing now as an adult man or a woman, bring it into the light. Bring it to someone who loves and cares. There's absolutely no shame in having been abused, but there's utter destruction in not bringing it to the light, not dealing with it. Because of the domino effect, abused people, wounded people become people who abuse and who wound generally. Their lives are a wreck, and that train wreck morphs into other people's lives. So, Martin, thanks again, man. This is powerful and profound, and the whole idea is to bring healing. You can only be dangerous if you're whole and healed.
Can I do an advert?
Do an advert. Yeah. No, Matrix Men. I mean,
yeah. And my book goes into print and it's on Amazon as well.
Fantastic.
Bestseller on Amazon. And it's called The Pumpkin Van. And it combines the life stories of 6 different men and myself. It combines therapy, narrative therapy, science, neuroscience. it brings it all together.
It's so real. It's authentic.
It's real, authentic, it's, and it provides hope and answers as well. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, look it up. The Pumpkin Van. Fantastic. Bit of a weird name.
That's but wonderful.
You got to read the book to see why.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Craig.
I think I can declare you officially dangerous to abuse.
Well, yeah. I hope I get more dangerous to abuse.
You will, as your team grows. Awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.